it's not just about solving problems. It's about how to best take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves.
So what is Vistage all about? Like, is it more about the business side, the personal side? What does it really touch on?
I mean, CEOs have personal issues that affect their business performance, and sometimes they just need someone who isn't in their family or their close friends to talk those things out with.
Actually, it's funny. This morning, I was at the gym, and our gym coach said, today, the theme of the workout is discomfort. So I want you guys to be able to sit in discomfort, go with it. So I'm curious about your life. Like, when has that moment happened for you?
Immense challenge, because I had no idea how different life would be in the UK versus the US. I was in a long distance relationship at that point because of the move. That was challenging. Mm-hmm. The discipline of taking one day a month out of your business and visiting with these 18 other CEOs is the first step towards a little bit of independence for your brain from the business. The times you grow is when you jump into the unknown. Mm-hmm. You take a new step. That's the growth. You know, if you do the same job every day and nothing changes, there's no growth there. It's treading water.
Welcome to The Show Goes On, a podcast about the people who keeps businesses running behind the scenes. My name is Amir Narani, and today I'm joined by John Collins. With 4 decades of leadership experience across industries like technology, telecom, and food and beverage, John Collins helps CEOs navigate high-stakes decisions with clarity and confidence. As a Vistage chair, he facilitates confidential peer advisory groups for business leaders in New York City. His mission is to provide a trusted space where executives get insight, accountability, and growth through the wisdom of their peers. John is currently selecting founding members for his new CEO group designed to serve as a personal board of directors for its members. John, thanks for being here today. How are you?
Thank you, Amir. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to have a chat.
Yeah, of course. So when people ask about you and what you do, how do you answer?
Well, I'm sort of semi-retired, right? I came to Vistage because I felt like I had done my duty as a CEO, but I still wanted to give back and I still wanted to help people develop as leaders. So through my whole career, especially as I became, you know, a manager and a leader in business, I always felt extremely dedicated to my teams and making sure that I was spending adequate time and resources on their professional development and, of course, their personal development if that sometimes needed to be done. So this was a natural progression from being the CEO, doing that, to actually now pulling a group of CEOs who have sort of similar sort of challenges and allowing them to help each other. So I facilitate the discussions and I select the members to create the right dynamic for the CEOs to really thrive, to make better decisions about their businesses, improve their performance, and really reach the dreams that they have and for themselves, their family, you know, and their employees.
That's awesome. And so how is that being around like a group of CEOs? Like, do you find that challenging, fun, difficult? I'm curious.
Well, you know, CEOs are just like everybody else, right? They put their trousers on one leg at a time. And they always, you know, when I was young, I mean, CEO was like a god, right? Now that I've been running businesses, obviously I realize that we're just human. They're just human. And they have the same issues and insecurities that we all do. The thing that separates a CEO from a person who's not a CEO is really experience and their ability to leverage that experience to make good decisions. And probably as well their background and network of people who can help them make decisions when the decisions are tough, right? They always say that being a CEO is lonely at the top, and that is definitely true. And what I love about Vistage is that you can get rid of some of the loneliness because in my group, you'll have anywhere from 16 to 18 members on a monthly basis sitting down with you and processing your issues with you. You know, before you execute a decision, but you're not sure about, and before you sort of bring it up inside of your organization, you can test it and sound it off of your colleagues, your peers, and reach a better decision. And it really helps.
That's awesome. So what is Vistage all about? Like, is it more about the business side, the personal side? What does it really touch on?
Well, you know, obviously the fundamental thing about Vistage is about business, right? So, and Vistage has many different leadership development courses or groups for members and the employees of members. The top level is for the CEOs of either small businesses or larger businesses. We can separate them into two groups because their issues are going to be different. If you're an under $5 million business, for example, you're not going to necessarily have a great big leadership team to help you, you know, make decisions, and you're going to probably be in the weeds all the time, mm-hmm. right? You're going to be doing a lot of the scout work. But when you have a $40 million or $50 million business and 100 or 150 employees, you're at a different point of your development. And so we segregate the groups so they can help each other really better because they all share some common issues. And then we actually have programs underneath those that allow you to develop future leaders and other employees. So it sort of helps a leader develop their whole business. And that's what makes Vistage unique. It's different than many of the other organizations. And it's certainly not really a networking organization. It's really about professional development. There's a network. There's 45,000 members that you get to access.
Oh, wow.
But on a monthly basis, you sit down with the same 16 to 18 people and you thrash out the issues that you have or they have.
How many members does each chapter have? I'm assuming there's chapters like in every city, right?
Yeah, it really depends, you know, but each chair can have multiple groups. Mm-hmm. The maximum size of a group is 20 for the CE groups. they are anywhere from 12 to 20 people in general. It all depends on what the chair wants, what works for the chair, because there's not just group get-togethers, there's personal coaching. So every month I meet with every one of the CEOs in the group for 2 hours of personal coaching to really hear them out in a private, you know, space where they can feel completely, you know, comfortable, hear their issues, maybe advise them on what to bring up in the group meeting, or just to deal with personal issues. I mean, CEOs have personal issues that affect their business performance, and sometimes they just need someone who isn't in their family or their close friends to talk those things out with.
Yeah, I want to explore that more. How do personal issues get in the way of running the business sometimes? Like, how do you see that show up?
Well, you know, I mean, so it's no secret that a CEO job is demanding, right? You don't have as we said before, it's lonely at the top. You have to make all of the decisions. Everyone wants a piece of you, right? Every day they want your ear about a particular issue. You know, if your leadership team isn't the strongest, you might be spending even more time with them solving and resolving issues. Not every CEO gets to deal with strategy every day, right?
Yeah.
It's the everyday stuff. And so you can imagine if, you know, you have a death in the family or a divorce, you know, or any number of issues that will distract a CEO from their role, right? They're going to start to spend more time on personal issues, and that might impact their performance. And they don't want that to happen. And many CEOs, you know, don't know where to turn for that sort of support. Mm-hmm. So the group can work on personal issues as well as professional issues, and sometimes they're very they match up. So, for example, you might be coaching as part of the group. A CEO might bring a very similar problem but different to the table on a regular basis. So now the CEOs might say, "Hey, this is a pattern we're seeing here. So mm-hmm. let's turn this back on the CEO and say, what is it about sort of your issues that are making this pattern happen, and how can we help you sort of address that so that you stop it, for example, right?"
Yeah, I was going to say almost sort of like a deeper rooted issue that maybe that's hidden within their personal and professional context.
Right. I mean, you know, imposter syndrome is a real thing, and it exists for CEOs just like for anybody else, right? And if you're not always, you know, the most confident you can be, you know, and you question your decisions or you're slow to make decisions, you know, that can affect the business, right? But it's a personal issue that you have to sort of get to grips with.
Yeah. How have you seen imposter syndrome hold back CEOs?
I see it mostly in sort of slow decisions, you know, decisions that need to be made and just don't happen. Crazy, you know, I mean, especially in HR issues, you know, when you obviously you care about every person who works for you, but some people, you know, for whatever reason, they're not a good fit. Right. But, you know, and people don't always realize this, but it can be an anguishing decision for a CEO to let somebody go.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and then if you have imposter syndrome, you question your own capabilities, your own intelligence on an issue. So people, you know, you keep someone who should have been moved on to a different role somewhere else faster. And it's often, you know, if it's a bad fit, it's better for everybody to, you know, go to, you know, different ways.
Yeah. You know, like it's like when you have someone who's just not working out, sometimes it's best for both parties because you're holding them back from reaching their highest potential as well then.
That's right. But everybody stays in their comfort zone and nobody takes the jump. You know, what is it they say? You know, the times you grow is when you jump into the unknown. You take a new step. That's the growth. That's the growth. You know, if you do the same job every day and nothing changes, there's no growth there.
Yeah.
It's treading water.
I'm curious about a time in your life where you took like a big jump or got really uncomfortable. Actually, it's funny. This morning, I was at the gym, and our gym coach said, "Today, the theme of the workout is discomfort. So, I want you guys to be able to sit in discomfort, go with it." So, I'm curious about your life. Like, when has that moment happened for you?
Well, you know, I was in a startup. I was working in Silicon Valley for a startup, and I sold a huge. I was a systems engineer. I was attached to a salesperson, and we were selling tech routers, you know, and I was working with switches called asynchronous transfer mode switching. So it was packet switching for the backbone of corporate networks and things like that. And so I sold a huge deal with my salesperson to Hewlett Packard. And it was a big project, long term. And my boss is at the startup. They said, "Hey, you know, we want to reward you. What would you like to do?" And I said, "I'd really like to work in Europe." So, you know, it was a small company, maybe 45, 50 people. And they packed me off to the UK, and I landed there really with, there was no company there to sort of receive me. It was just me and a British sales guy that they hired. And, you know, it was an immense challenge because I had no idea how different life would be in the UK versus the US. And so personally, extremely challenging as I adjusted to that. I was in a long distance relationship at that point because of the move. That was challenging. And then, you know, we didn't have anyone around us. It was just me and this British salesperson. And I tell you, you know, homesickness was a big problem for a long time. But eventually, you know, I started meeting our customers and selling more and more. And I was traveling around Europe, and I eventually fell in love with it and thought that I would live there for the rest of my life. And
really?
So it went from, you know, a bit of terror and discomfort to, you know, real happiness.
Yeah. And it's because you took that jump. You're okay with the idea of being uncomfortable for a little bit.
That's right. You know, doing business across Europe means that every day you're dealing with a different culture. And that's a challenge. You know, my voice, my speech patterns changed because I was speaking in English to people who really, that was not their first language. So that was the first challenge, you know, and then, eventually really fell in love with the whole thing. And really it was addicting to travel around and meet new people all the time, and it was the best experience. Eventually, we got acquired by Lucent Technologies, and I was traveling all over the world for the product house that I represented at that.
Oh, wow, that's awesome!
It was amazing. It was an amazing time.
Yeah, that's so cool that you're able to infuse a lot of travel within your work.
Yes. Oh, you don't see a lot, you know. You fly from London to Singapore and you're there for a night, you know, and then you're on another flight to Tokyo, and you spend all your time in the air. You know, there's not always a lot of time for sightseeing. But I always made notes of places I really wanted to go back to.
So. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite country that you went out to that you were like, oh wow, I wish I could live out here, or I wish I could visit it more.
Well, you know what, I fell in love with France, and so that is. It's been a long-term romance with the language and the food and the country, and I go back there all the time.
That's awesome. We were talking about movies before we got on. Midnight in Paris is like one of my favorite movies of all time. So,
yeah, it's such a beautiful. Paris is, unsurpassed, right? There's a reason it's the city of romance, and it's, but it's also the city of incredible food, even though. Lyon is the food capital of France. Paris is no slouch, right?
What is that? Lyon?
Lyon, right. That's the gourmand capital of France. So,
oh, cool. I'll have to look that up. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, Lyon. It's the second largest city in France, and it's amazing food. It's in the countryside. It's very close to the vineyards, you know, it's a great city.
That's awesome. What was that experience like landing in the UK? I know you talked about it earlier, but, you know, the idea of wanting to go to Europe and work there, but then you get dropped off into the UK. What's going through your head? Because I'm assuming you didn't really know anyone there besides the British sales guy that you were working with.
Right. I didn't know anybody there. So, wow. So I was completely alone, and, you know, I mean, the first moment was a hair-raising car ride to my new apartment with my things. You know, I rented a car, and you know, I thought from Heathrow to West London really is not a long drive, but it was probably one of the most terrifying 45 minutes of my life. eventually, I got used to driving there, but it was weird things that really set you, like the inability to get a bank account, right? I mean, they would ask you something like, you know, oh, you need a letter from your banker to open a bank account. And I'm like, I don't know who my banker is. Bank of America was my bank, right? I don't have that. So I was luckily I was at the, our business was located in Oxford. So at the Oxford Science Center. And at one point, Northwest Bank came in and said, everybody here who's a foreigner can have a bank account.
Oh, wow.
And otherwise I was taking cash, you know, so I would have to, I was getting paid in the US, I would withdraw cash, and then I would go to the post office to pay my bills. Right. I mean, that's how crazy it was, you know. And then, you know, if you're traveling all over the place, you don't have time all the time. So you're just like panicked, you know, is my internet going to be turned off? Right. All of that. So it was a very different place, but I loved London. I mean, London has an incredible heartbeat that, you know, even though I live in New York City and I love New York City, you know, London has a lifestyle that really fits me.
That's cool. Yeah. You know, I'm curious about that because like I went to London for the first time this past summer. And New York is one of my favorite cities ever. It is my favorite city. I would consider Manhattan to be number one for me. But I've been told by a lot of people, London's really cool. So you should really check that out more. So you live in New York City or you're close to it right now, but I'm assuming you spend more of your time there. What is the biggest difference between London and New York City for you?
Well, you know, there's no, you know, Manhattan is manic, right? It's but that's what's great about it. There's so much activity. People, life is on the streets, you know, and it's hard to sort of get that, you know, at any other place in the U.S. London is a little bit quieter. I mean, it has obviously clubs and clubbing and, you know, crazy life. But, you know, it's a lot greener and it really appealed to me. So I actually live in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Okay. I moved there because it was a huge Polish community. So it had a European sort of feel. Mm-hmm. It was very green. It's not as pretty as London, but it had a vibe that felt a little more European than going into Manhattan, which, you know, is nuts. I grew up on Long Island outside of Manhattan. We were there in there a lot as a kid, you know, but it was too much for me. You know, I need to be able to open my windows and hear the birds. In Brooklyn, you can do that. In Manhattan, not so easy.
I feel like that's what happens to a lot of New Yorkers. They start off in Manhattan and then they make their way over to Brooklyn then.
Right. Yeah. So it's a beautiful, Brooklyn is great. And, you know, now Manhattanites come to Brooklyn to party at night. So unfortunately, very close to my neighborhood. So there's, you know, the weekends are jam packed.
Yeah. Got to find the next spot now.
Exactly. So
on Vistage, you know, it's a pure group. That's what it feels like. Why is it so important for entrepreneurs to be in a peer group or a group where they feel heard and understood?
You know, for entrepreneurs especially, you are, you know, generally, you know, it's your there's the echo chamber in your head, you know. Yeah. You don't really have any peers in your office most of the time. And when you sit at the desk of the CEO and everyone looks for you to be the answer person, right? Tell me this, help me do that. You know, you find it more and more complicated to reach out and find the time to reach out to other people who might be having similar issues and similar experiences. Mm-hmm. The discipline of taking one day a month out of your business and visiting with these 18 other CEOs is the first step towards a little bit of independence for your brain from the business. And then you have the opportunity to work on some of the issues that are driving you, you know, to distraction when you're at your desk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could get a personal coach, right? But that's a different sort of experience, right? Mm-hmm. Part of what I do is I coach people as well, but coaching is different than sitting with 18 CEOs who have different experiences, different expertise, have approached the same problem from different perspectives, have different solutions to the same problems. That's gold, right? And it could really shorten your time to make a decision, you know, that can help you be more successful. You know, it's not just about solving problems. It's about how to best take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. And if you're a small business entrepreneur, you know, scaling is everything, mm-hmm. right? And you have to find other people who can imagine sort of your scaling in different ways, so you can sort of see that perspective and bring it back to your team and move faster and maybe with fewer errors.
Yeah, for sure. When you're around other people who've scaled before, suddenly it doesn't become as daunting.
No? That's right. Exactly right. I mean, there's just some of it is confidence, mm-hmm. right? Oh, these guys did it. I got it. You know,
right.
Now I understand what I can do. Right. That confidence helps a lot, you know, and, you know, it's important. You know, one of the things that's also important is, you know, I would like an equal, you know, I like a lot of diversity in the room, you know, men and women, you know, people of different sort of backgrounds, because their insights are also going to be different. And that feedback, you know, to a CEO is really valuable, because what you find out is the CEO, you know, even though you think, oh, you know, I have a great team and we're all friendly, they don't tell you anything that you don't want to hear. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
CEO peers have no fear of telling you.
They'll tell you straight up what they think. Yeah.
Right. They have no fear. There's no bias for them. They don't have skin in your game. So they'll tell you what they think. And that is really valuable.
Yeah. So is the way it works is that everyone goes around and shares their update and then people are able to give like their experiences or is it like experiences or advice or how does it work?
So, you know, in most of the meetings, there's an external speaker who comes in for a few hours. Okay. So the Vistage has, I think it's 1400 people in its speaker bureau. So as a team, the group figures out who they want to hear from, what are the things they want to learn about. And then after that, we focus on a particular, one of the particular businesses. There's an accountability section. So every CEO talks about the numbers, their numbers, right? So it's a confidential place. People share everything about their business and they provide the numbers and they provide their goals. And if you miss your numbers, this accountability team is going to want to know, why did you miss? Mm-hmm. You know, what happened, right? Yeah. Hey, you missed the last 3 months. Why? What's happening in your business? You know, you don't bring an issue to the table, but something is not working, you know? Yep. And so that accountability, again, without fear, there's no fear of retribution, right? Mm-hmm. So it is, it's the accountability circle. You know, we all go around and did we measure up this month, right? And then the next piece is called issue processing. So it's a Vistage sort of proprietary issue processing method that allows a CEO to bring an issue to the table. And then the group helps the CEO get to the real issue, because sometimes the issue you bring to the table isn't really the issue that is driving you. Like one example, a guy came to the table. He wanted to get a new accounting system, he said, because there wasn't an audit trail in their accounting system. And so it turned out that someone was stealing that. He wanted the audit trail because he couldn't track the $3,000 a month that was missing in the system. Mm-hmm. So the real issue is, well, you have to catch the thief, right? Obviously you want to have might need to upgrade your software, but you have a bigger issue. And he didn't want to bring it up because he didn't want to upset his other business partners. Mm-hmm. Right. So really, it's fascinating, right?
A lot of issues, yeah.
Right. So as you're talking about it, this issue comes out and it changes the whole complexion of the problem. Yeah. And it changes the whole complexion of the solutions that the CEO has offered to that person. And then they say, okay, what are you going to do about this? Which of these solutions works for you? And what are you going to do? And they press for an executable decision, you know, with a date. Mm-hmm. You know, that's... No one holds, the only people who hold a CEO to the feet to the fire like that is a CEO board. And many companies don't have a board.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's why having like a group to kind of check you on your assumptions or, you know, I mean, it's easy to just get a software and pay $500 a month. And hopefully that fixes the issue. But the deep rooted issue is the trust between the ownership group.
Right.
Catching people who are stealing within the company. Those are much bigger issues.
Those are huge issues that need resolution, because you're not going to grow with those issues.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Man, I feel like you probably hear about things all the times that entrepreneurs are going through then.
Yeah, you know, I do. You know, I've been through a lot of startup companies. And so I have a lot of experience. You know, I've seen a lot. I've been through a lot. My friends say I channel Obama. I've learned not to panic, right?
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay, it's a crisis, but let's not panic. Let's figure this out. And, you know, it's the same for entrepreneurs, right? They start to sweat the bullets. And it's especially sweaty. You start to sweat a lot if you have investors and you have a problem. And you don't want to tell your investors, I don't know the answer, mm-hmm. right? So entrepreneurs who have external investors, you know, benefit from this because they have a place to go where they can say, I don't know this, and they can help, they can get the development potentially that they need to solve the problem without going to their investor pool and say, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing. Right. Right. So entrepreneurs is a great place for entrepreneurs. And you know, there's nothing for me. I have worked in enormous companies and small companies, and the life of a small company is, you know, fascinating to me. I love to be there. The work is harder, right? Well, or different. I shouldn't say harder. It's different. Yeah. Your hands are in the mix much more, but I love that. And that excites me.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. So for Vistage, is it all types of businesses and industries? Is there a certain like revenue qualification or?
Well, you know, okay, it's all types of businesses, but generally it's, you know, small to medium sized businesses. So I think it's important that businesses sort of share some of the same level of complexity. I think that's, you know, like, you know, roughly, you know, somewhere between, you know, a couple hundred employees down to 25 or 50, right? Mm-hmm. And the challenge with revenue is that it all depends what you're selling, right? If you're selling diamonds, you know, you're going to make more revenue per person than you're going to make if you're selling flour, right? Mm-hmm. So so it's I think the complexity is in the how you sell, how you distribute, you know, that, and how many people you have to manage, and is it, you know, spread out or is it in a single location? So it's hard to say, you know, which businesses are the best, but every business potentially has a fit for this. And even not-for-profits, I mean, not-for-profit, you know, people who manage not-for-profits, CEOs of not-for-profits, you know, the money comes from somewhere else. They're selling themselves to somebody else to get the money in, you know, but the issues are all fundamentally the same.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I'm eager to build into my group two or three not-for-profits that, you know, that I have a special interest in, that I'd like to see, you know, their CEOs, you know, get the development to make them more successful. You know, New York City has, I mean, if you probably watch the news, we have lots of people who are poor and don't have the resources that they need, and that we have a lot of really excellent not-for-profit organizations who, you know, are dedicated to helping those people.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. I mean, when you talk about it that way, for sure, a lot of these nonprofits, they're facing some of the same business issues. They just happen to get the funding from elsewhere then.
That's right. Exactly. But running a business is running a business. HR issues, always the same.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to end with some rapid fire questions, if that's okay with you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. These are easy ones, but I'm just curious. Okay.
Soft pitch.
Your favorite book.
You know, my whole life I've been a Lord of the Rings fan since I was 8 years old. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Favorite city. I know we kind of talked about this earlier.
Paris.
All right. Favorite movie or TV show.
My favorite movie. What would be my favorite movie? That's a hard one. I know my favorite TV show has been 10%. I can't remember what it is in English. It's a TV show, a French TV show on Netflix, but it's translated into English now about agents and their movie star clients.
Oh, cool! I got to check that out. I haven't heard of that.
Oh yeah, it's amazingly funny.
Okay. And your favorite sports team?
The Mets.
All right. Tried and true New Yorker. That's awesome. John, thank you so much for joining today. Before we sign off, any final takeaways that you want to share?
Amir, I want people to, you know, if they take anything away from it, is that the most important thing about leadership is developing yourself and developing your team. You know, if you spend the time on those things, you're going to hit success, and you're going to have fewer sleepless nights because you'll have people you can rely on to help you run and grow and scale your business. So, you know, I'm doing Vistage because I'd like to help people do that. And that's really, I guess, my last thing. So, but I appreciate the time. It's very nice to talk to you and Superman and the Rodin sculpture.
Oh, yeah.
And I really appreciate the time and the chat. It was really interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Well said.
Thanks.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you too.